Joanna almost threw herself at Brudenoy when he and Zimmerman came back into the control center. "He's in the vent?" she asked, her voice high with tension. Brudenoy said as soothingly as he knew how to, "He's on his way. He'll be at the EVC in half an hour at the most." Anson muttered, tight-lipped. "They can do a lot of damage in half an hour, I bet you." Brudenoy shrugged. "As long as they don't damage the recycling equipment too badly." "Good thing they don't have any explosives in there," Anson said, turning back to the wall screen. "It's a question of time now," Brudenoy said to Joanna. "Can Doug get there soon enough to stop them from doing too much damage?" Joanna fought to keep back her tears. Doug was going to have to fight Greg. At best, only one of her sons would come out of this alive, she knew. "We're picking up his transponder signal," called one of the technicians from his monitoring station. "Put it on the big screen," Anson commanded. A blinking red dot showed up on the wall screen, halfway down the gray line marking the vent running atop Tunnel 3. Zimmerman, sitting on one of the little wheeled console chairs like a walrus perched on a beach ball, pointed and asked, "That is him?" "That's him," Anson replied. "Can we speak with him?" "He's got a pocket phone," she said. "He'll call in when he hits the first partition." Joanna stared at the blinking red dot as it moved slowly along the gray line. Brudenoy stood beside her and put an arm around her shoulders. She leaned against him, grateful for the support. Roger Deems unconsciously gnawed on a fingernail as the eight others, three women among them, filed into the security office. "Just my luck," Deems thought, "to be tapped for the security job this month." The others looked equally unhappy. The security assignment was rotated among the longtime lunatics. Usually, the job required nothing more than keeping the base's surveillance cameras working. Drugs were a minor problem, but the long-timers usually policed themselves pretty well and kept the short-timers under control. The still that produced rocket juice was an open secret and seldom made problems for anyone. The toughest moment Deems could remember had been when two short-timers got into a fistfight in the cave over a woman they both coveted. By the time that month's security chief had arrived on the scene, like the sheriff in an Old West barroom brawl, the other lunatics had already ended the fight simply by dousing the combatants with all the fruit juice they could grab from the dispensers. Wet and sticky, the two young men felt foolish and embarrassed. Wyatt Earp was not really needed. Deems had been at his desk performing a routine check of the surveillance cameras when the automatic emergency announcement blared from the overhead speakers. The sound of the airtight hatches slamming shut all along the tunnel startled him, but he didn't get too worried until Ginny Anson's voice came on the speakers and ordered everyone to stay put, then ended with an ominous, "This is not a drill." Before Deems could get out of his desk chair, Anson was on the phone, telling him tightly what had happened and what she expected him to accomplish. Deems swallowed twice to keep down the bitter bile that was suddenly burning its way up his throat, nodded once to Anson, and got busy. He punched into the loudspeaker system, startled to hear his own voice booming out in the tunnel as he said, "This is the security chief. We need volunteers to help clear up this emergency. Anybody in Tunnel 2 who isn't involved in life support work and doesn't have to get past one of the closed hatches, report to the security office right away." Volunteers, Deems almost laughed. Anybody who could reach the security office without going through one of the closed hatches was a volunteer by definition. Now the three women and five men stood crowded, worried and uncertain before his desk. "The base director's locked himself in the EVC and is threatening to cut off our air," Deems said to the assembled volunteers without preamble. They gasped, shocked. "We need to open the EVC's hatch," he went on, running a hand through his thinning hair. "And we don't have time for pre-breathing."
"What do you mean, we? Why do we have to do it?"
"Yeah, aren't there specialists for a problem like this?"
"Like who?" Deems asked, trying hard to scowl at them. No one had an answer. "Listen," he said, leaning back in his chair and folding his arms over his chest. "We can sit here on our rumps and let the cuckoo son of a bitch choke off our air, or we can try to do something about it. Which is it gonna be?"
"You mean we need to get into suits? It's that bad?"
"Air pressure in Tunnel 4 is way down, unbreathable," said Deems. actually beginning to enjoy the feeling of authority. And the pressure's dropping in Tunnel 3.
Christ, my wife's in 3.
Deems raised the chubby hand. Don't panic. We've already got safety people evacuating 3. She'll be okay.
But we have to get into suits?
One of the women asked, not certain she had heard him correctly. That's right. No time for pre-breathing, either.
Isn't that dangerous?
Not if we do it right, said Deems. We're going to the suit rack at the end of this tunnel and purge a half-dozen backpack tanks. Get rid of the low-pressure mix that's in them and refill them with regular base air. Then you won't need pre-breathing, and there's no danger of the bends.
But if you pump up the suits to room normal pressure, they'll get so stiff we won't be able to move in them, said one of the men.
Deems recognized him as an engineer from the mining group. You won't have to do any delicate work, he countered. Just set up a laser torch to burn through the hatch. The engineer looked dubious and muttered something too low for Deems to catch. But we gotta move fast, Deems said, starting to feel like a real leader. No time to waste. We've got to get into the EVC before he knocks out all the pumps and recyclers.
Isn't there any other way to get to the EVC?
They don't like this, Deems could tell by looking at their faces. Not any of it. Can't say I blame them. Doug Stavanger is working his way through the old plasma vents, he said, but we don't know if he can make it all the way to the EVC or not. In the meantime, we got to get that locked hatch open.
Wait a minute, said one of the engineers.
If the pressure's down in Tunnel 4, and we burn through the hatch, won't that blow the air out of the EVC?
Right.
And anybody in there gets killed?
Most likely.
Then what about Stavanger? What if he's in there when we blow the hatch?
Deems shrugged.
We'll carry extra suits and try to get them on all 3 of the people in there before decompression gets them.
Fat chance, grumbled the engineer.
Deems knew he was right.
Shouldn't we be taking the recyclers apart? Melissa asked.
Her arms hurt from exertion, and she could feel blisters welling up painfully on the palms of her hands.
Greg snorted impatiently, kneeling over one of the pumps.
What good's the recycling equipment if the pumps aren't moving fresh air? Kill the pumps and you kill the people.
He seemed calmer now, methodical. When they had first burst into the EVC, Greg was frenzied, wild-eyed. Now he worked with the deliberate, meticulous care of a man who was totally dedicated to his task.
He's really going to do it, Melissa said to herself for the 100th time. He's going to kill them all. He's going to kill himself. He's going to kill me.
For the first time, she realized that there was no way to stop Greg. If she tried to interfere with him dismantling the pumps, he would calmly brain her with one of the wrenches. She shuddered.
Haven't heard that booming noise again, Greg said absently as he worked, head bent over the inner works of the pump.
No, said Melissa. It stopped.
What do you think they're doing outside?
I don't know, she said. Getting into spacesuits, maybe?
Greg laughed. Fat lot of good it'll do 'em. There aren't enough to go around. Oh, I suppose my mother and her little circle of sycophants are in suits. But the others, no.
Maybe they're calling for help.
Greg looked up at her. His face was smeared with grime, but he smiled brightly at Melissa.
I'm sure they are. They must be screaming for help. But the quickest any help can come from Earth is 6 hours or more, and that's only if they have an LTV all ready to go and it's programmed for a high-energy boost.
They could be calling to the other bases here on the moon, couldn't they?
My mother asked Yamagata or the Europeans for help. She'd sooner die.
You don't really believe that.
His dark eyes snapped at her.
Don't tell me what I believe. If she asked Yamagata or the Europeans for help, they'd end up owning Moonbase. She'd never do that. She wouldn't even think of it.
But that's better than dying, isn't it?
Greg pulled a section of pipe away from the dismantled pump and let it drop to the rock floor with a clang.
Besides, what could anybody do to help her? Before anybody can break through the hatch to get to us, everybody out there will be dead.
Melissa paced back and forth along the narrow walkway between pumps, arms folded across her chest, massaging her aching muscles.
They must be doing something, she said.
Greg snorted disdainfully.
If I know my mother, she's spending her last moments writing me out of her will.
Doug's sneeze rang along the length of the metal-walled vent like a raucous gong.
The dust was